Browns and Ravens coming up on Sunday, 1 p.m. Andrew Siciliano on the call, Gerard Cherry on the sideline, and the Browns radio analyst Nathan Zagura. He's in the booth, and he joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Nathan, good morning.
Good morning, Ken. How are you?
We're doing well. I want to see if you're doing better. Do you believe Ken Dorsey should call plays from the booth or not from the booth, on the sidelines possibly?
I don't think that matters. Many of the play callers in the league are on the sidelines, and many are in the booth. I think it's just kind of a personal preference.
Where would you rather call plays if you were calling plays, Nathan?
If I was doing it, I'd probably want to be on the sidelines, because then I could have that immediate ability to go talk to somebody. I understand being at the vantage point, for example, when I was on the sideline, what I could see versus when I'm in the booth, what I could see is completely different. But you have access to that all 22 so instantly on the surfaces that I would want to be on the sideline, just because I could have that, be able to read, you know, body language, talk to people, and be there. But I've never done it, so, I mean, this is based on nothing. My play-calling experience is limited to Madden, and I am pretty good at that.
But we all have, I mean, we all have our opinions. There's guys driving right now in a 2024 Chevy Silverado, and they have their own opinions on I-480 right now. You know, I don't know.
They're going to be driving in a Dodge Ram.
Well, yeah, but it would be too easy if I made that up. So
he was recusing himself.
I recuse myself from the conversation. Now, I would drive a Ram because Ram trucks are the finest, and I would get mine from North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram because they are the finest. But for other people...
You're welcome for that assist right there. Call me John Stockton. Yeah. Stay up right there. The mailman delivers.
Go ahead, Tone.
Nathan, your level of surprise when Kevin Stefanski, for the first time, that wasn't in a preseason game, as coach of the Browns, gave up the play calling duties.
I was pretty surprised, to be honest with you. I really thought going into the season that it might be possible that Ken Dorsey would call plays, you know, going into the season. So I was surprised. I think it's, you know, right now we're getting a weekly surprise. Last week it was Amari Cooper was traded. This week it's Ken Dorsey's calling the play. So, definitely surprised. Kevin Stefanski, a two-time coach of the year. We know that obviously he can orchestrate a very successful offense. And what's interesting about it is with the timing of it now, there are two variables that have changed. It's not just the play caller, so it's not a perfect kind of apples to apples right there. It's also the quarterback, because you're having now two things. Deshaun Watson is out for the year with the Achilles. Jameis Winston's going to be your quarterback. And you've changed the play caller. So it makes it a little bit, I think, more of a muddy evaluation in terms of what were the actual levers driving things here. I have total belief in Kevin Stefanski, always have total belief in his ability as a play caller. So, yeah, I was actually pretty surprised. I do think, though, in talking to him after the fact, as I did last night for the Kevin Stefanski show, I think that the time of it, and obviously when you have a struggling team, things are very different than when you have a team that is winning. When they are winning, it's the great deodorant, everybody's getting along, everything's working. So I think it gives him time to focus on the team, the CEO, the leadership, getting everybody to row in the same direction, as well as, you know, being able to be involved in other aspects of things on game days, hopefully, obviously, helping to clean up some of these pre-snap penalties that have been bugging the team. He's able to spend significantly more time, he said, in defensive and special teams meeting rooms. So, you know, hopefully it all adds up to a good thing for the Cleveland Browns. But yes, I was surprised.
Yeah, Nathan, the CEO thing, I was just about to ask you about that. Then you said it. This is year five. I am a little surprised we haven't seen more of Kevin up and down on the sidelines talking to individuals all over the offense, maybe even some defense. I remember kind of famously the Sean McVay example, where he was only offense for like 2 years, and then he made a concerted effort to start to do other things, and they would show him. The cameras would be all over him on the sidelines talking to the various personnel groupings. Is this maybe finally that opportunity to do that?
I think it is. I think Kevin Stefanski has done it. I think he's just going to be able to do it in a much bigger way, because when you're, as he said to me, when you're play calling, your eyes are on your sheet, and that's what you're looking at. That's what you're focused on. Now he's going to be freed up to do some more of those things. I mean, Sean McVay used to go sit on the bench with his quarterbacks while the defense was on the field. I mean, so yes, I don't think Kevin Stefanski ever did that. But I do think it provides for more opportunity to do some of those things.
Nathan Zagura joining us here on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. All right, this has been a touchy subject, but I have to get your opinion on it. I've been very defensive of Browns fans far and wide. I know that I'm not condoning the few people that were whooping it up when Deshaun Watson got hurt, but You've watched the back and forth. Can we finally move on this Sunday, or are things going to be a little bit awkward between the fans and players?
No, I think I hope we're able to move on this Sunday. I thought Nick Chubb said it best, right? When you aren't winning, there's a lot of frustration. And if we can win and give the fans something to cheer about, that will certainly help cure this going forward. It is a very touchy situation because I think, you know, from the fans' perspective, they are frustrated with the performance of this team. Obviously, we all know that, you know, the acquisition was controversial at the time and still obviously is, and there are feelings about that from our fan base. But I think it's really as simple as, you know, when you're winning, everything is good. When you are not winning, things are not as good. And so it becomes a very, you know, testy situation. And we've seen in many instances around the league, and I would even say in Cleveland, where players who had, you know, checkered past, if they perform well, they're beloved. And if they do not, they are not. And I think that's just kind of part of the human nature of this thing. But I certainly hope, I think Browns fans are the best. I think that, you know, everybody wants this thing to be going a lot differently than it is. And I think there's a lot of frustration in all aspects around it. And hopefully, you know, you can start winning some games. You know, think about it last year when you went to a Browns game in the city of Cleveland, you won. 8-1 they were at home. You haven't seen a win yet this year. This season has not gone the way anybody wants. And so obviously that leads to a lot of frustration and a lot of probably anger and resentment amongst the fans.
All right, Jameis Winston taking over the starting role this week. It probably would have been DTR, but instead it's Jameis. What is a reasonable expectation for somebody who really has just not been the starting quarterback all that often over the last 5 years in the NFL?
Yeah, he's just got 10 starts in those last five seasons, 6-4 in those 10 starts, almost a 2-1 touchdown to interception ratio, which for Jameis has been very good. What I think my expectation is that he's going to throw it. I think that anybody, you know, and that's one of the other things when you talk about Stefanski giving up the play calling is, and I'm sure you guys have had plenty of people on who do this, and you probably do this in your own time as well. If you watch the All-22, there were guys open down the field. And at times the ball just was not thrown by Deshaun Watson. And there are many examples of that. Jameis Winston will throw those balls. And now will he throw some to the other team? Probably. But we saw, you know, last year with Joe Flacco, who was not afraid to push the ball down the field and into tight windows, that we got a lot of big plays. He threw for over 300 yards. He did throw some pick sixes, but it netted out as a very positive for the Cleveland Browns. So I think that's what you're going to get with Jameis Winston. He will throw into some of those tight windows. He will throw the ball down the field. He will be a little bit more of a gunslinger than what we saw with Deshaun Watson under center. I mean, when you throw for 5,109 yards in a season, which he did in his last full season as a starting quarterback in the NFL. By the way, we looked it up. Only time in history that the NFL's leading passer was not a starter the next year in the NFL. Not due to injury, which is a wild thing, I think, for Jameis. But, yeah, I think he's going to throw the football. And this is a matchup where, quite frankly, and you add some more to the surprise, where I think we're going to accumulate stats and we're going to score points. The Baltimore Ravens have given up on the season 26 points per game, and they're giving up the most passing yards per game. They're giving up 308 yards passing when you remove for the sacks, like true passing yards. They're giving up 308 per game most of the league. So I think you'll get some statistical accumulation. I do think we will finally break through that 20-point barrier. And, you know, Jameis Winston, especially if Marlon Humphrey's out, who's their number one corner, this is a defense that you absolutely can pass the football on. And so I would expect Jameis Winston to do that. I think he's going to look pretty good. I think it's overall a very difficult matchup. The Browns are big underdogs, and justifiably so. The Ravens are historically good right now on offense. They're historically good running the football. Lamar's playing like an MVP. Derrick Henry has more rushing yards than 23 teams in the NFL, and Derrick Henry has 10 touchdowns, which is more than the Browns' offense. So they're playing like a juggernaut right now.
Nick Chubb, his return, what'd you think of it?
It was great to see him back. It was great to see him get into the end zone. It was so emotional. I thought seeing him come back, it was so emotional wanting him to get in the end zone and then having it so many times in three straight games when we're inside the opponent's five-yard line. We have a false start on the first play trying to get in. So he got in once and you were excited. And you're like, oh, man, is he going to get in again? And he did. It was great. But bottom line is, and it's been the case all year, this offensive line's got to do a better job. Nick Chubb averaged 2 yards a carry. That's not Nick Chubb-like. We know that he's the only player in NFL history to average 5 yards a carry or more in each of his first five seasons. But he also averaged 1.7 yards after contact per carry in that game. So that means he was getting hit on average just 0.3 of a yard down the field. you've got to give the guy some room. You've got to give him an opportunity to run and make a guy miss. He already did a good job getting through contact when he was basically getting hit at the line of scrimmage. Browns have to do a better job opening things up. But I thought he looked good, and I'm excited to see, you know, another week in how he looks as he continues to build kind of his stamina, his strength, and gets back into, you know, football shape. That's the only way to simulate playing football is to play football. And so I think we'll see Nick Chubb continue to get better and better. But huge shot in the arm, and that was a really cool – that's one of those moments that I will remember for a long time. You think about, you know, in the last couple of years, we've had so many emotional ones. You know, Jim Donovan smashing the guitar against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then, obviously, you know, this Nick Chubb return I thought was a very emotional one as well.
Who do you think is going to play left tackle?
I think if Jed Wills does not play left tackle, I think it's probably a pretty good chance that it's going to be DeJuan Jones. Because the options are either DeJuan Jones or Jermaine Ifedi. Jermaine Ifedi hasn't started a game since 2021. And I think that when you're thinking about this from a long-term scenario, right, it would make sense to see him over there, see the big guy over there, and see if maybe that's somewhere that he could solidify that position for you for the long-term future. Now, if Jed Wills returns to practice today, I think it'll be Jed Wills. But if he's out, those are the two options. James Hudson's out for the year. So my guess is, and these are not scores, this is not even an educated guess, this is just me, I would think it would probably give DeJuan Jones a shot there.
Should we have reason to be nervous about Dustin Hopkins, or is it just a little bit of a blip?
I think at this point he's got enough kind of good in the bank that you wouldn't be worried. But, you know, kicking is like a golf swing in many ways. And, you know, the toughest part sometimes is between the ears. I think Dustin Hopkins is a consummate professional, dialed in. He's been the best kicker we have had in a long, long time, and hopefully it's just a little bit of a hiccup, and he'll get back on track this week. I have all the confidence in the world.
My bad. Did you watch Vikings-Rams last night?
I did.
Okay, did you see the face mask that was not called?
I did, seems pretty – I don't understand how in this day and age when we have the ability to buzz down and correct a bunch of things, how that wasn't corrected.
It is egregious. Lima, why don't you go ahead and you explain your viewpoint of that?
Totally agreed. It was a laughably bad missed call by the officials. But yep. I ended up reacting a different way to the reactions. And it was Minnesota acting like they had been robbed. And I'm like, you had to go 98 yards. Your quarterback couldn't get rid of the football. He's dancing in the end zone forever. And he was about to get sacked by one or two different guys. So I don't know how much compassion I'm supposed to have.
Well, I mean, it's not they weren't robbed of a victory, because they still would have needed to go all those yards, as you mentioned, and get a 2-point conversion. But they were robbed of the opportunity to get a victory, right? And so I understand that. Look, the fact of the matter, the guy's face mask got pulled. That's 15 yards, and here we go. So they should have still had the football at that point instead of the game being over. So I get it. But yeah, that's tough. And that's what I don't understand, is how can that still be wrong? How can they still get that wrong? I'll even go to the one, I want to say, was it Sunday night? Was the Steelers?
I think yes. Yes.
When Minka Fitzpatrick clearly didn't break any rules. They watched the replay 100 times and like that's a blocked field goal. You have the ability. We're all seeing it. Make it right. I think that's what everybody at the end of the day just wants. And you don't need to have all these replays. You can buzz in and be like, you know, hey, guys, got that one wrong. That was actually a good play. Or, hey, grab this face mask. Let's go. They're able to do it so many times now on incompletions, or the knee was down before the quarterback threw the ball. It actually was a sack. Just get it all right. You're watching it. You got every screen and every angle available to you, apparently, except some that Amazon has. And you got to get it right.
Is the shine coming off the Vikings now? That's two in a row. Is Sam Darnold coming back down to earth?
I think if you were to look at this game and say who on the Vikings would be more responsible for what happened, it's a defense that had been dominant that just allowed Matt Stafford to throw for more passing touchdowns against them than he had in the first six games of the season, or at that point, I guess, first six games of the season combined. So, to me, that's where they had a little bit more of a letdown, giving up four touchdown drives for a defense that had been kind of lights out and basically in every category, you know, top three in the league. So I don't know if maybe some people have kind of, there's enough on tape of what Brian Flores was doing that now people have adjusted to it. I think that'll be a bigger story to watch going forward, because they've given up big points now 2 weeks in a row, the Lions, who are an excellent team, and then this week to a Rams team that was struggling but did get – Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp back, and they both had a massive impact on this game. Puka Nacua over 100 yards, Cooper Kupp with a touchdown, five catches, I think 51 yards. So that to me is what I'm watching more. Sam Darnold is going to be probably, you know, in the middle, but if that defense is as it was, that still is good enough to win. They're still 5-2, but yeah, they're, to me, they might be the fourth scariest team in their own division, because I think the Green Bay Packers are excellent. They are well coached. I'm a big Jordan Love fan. I think they've got a good defense as well. The Lions, to me, are the cream of the crop in that division. And I'll tell you what, the Bears' defense is very underrated. And now that Caleb Williams, you look what he's done in his last few games with DJ Moore and Keenan Allen and Rome Odunze and DeAndre Swift and Cole Kmet, they're kind of loaded. And I think they're a pretty fun team. So the Vikings might at the end of this be kind of the fourth team in that division.
Ooh. Yeah, Nathan, I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, the NFC North is a lot of fun, and I totally agree with what you're saying about Chicago
right
as well.
Now,
go ahead.
Right now, the NFC North has all four teams in the playoffs. If they were to start right now, they go 4-4, which is incredible.
Nathan, we thank you very much for the time. Check your phone after this. Talk to you later.
All right. Thank you. You got it.
Nathan Zagura. Oh, I want to make sure I say this the right way. As, you know, last week we were getting over the David Fry amazing home run, the amazing moments, getting ready for game four, then game five, and now it's all over, and we get ready for game one of the World Series. Whereas I guess I'll play this audio. Aaron Judge was asked about Shohei Ohtani. Guess what? Aaron Judge thinks Shohei Ohtani's a special player.
Hits for average, hits for power, the speed, you know, doing what he did this year with the 50 stolen bases. It got talked about a lot, but I don't think it got talked about enough. Impressive athlete, you know, the best player in the game, and, you know, what an ambassador for this sport.
Great. He's just bigger, younger Derek Jeter. Nothing interesting to say whatsoever. Here's Dave Roberts asked, now this is actually interesting, asked if, well, I'm getting to a point here, folks.
Sounds like
yeah, hold on. Dave Roberts, manager of the... Do people know that Dave Roberts is the manager of the Dodgers?
Two-second trivia. We just asked the question.
And people did not know it. He was asked if Ohtani could pitch in this World Series.
It's my turn to ask the annoying question. Is there any possibility of Shohei Ohtani pitching for you in the World Series?
There is no possibility, Alden. None whatsoever. Thank you for asking.
You're welcome.
He should just lie. Why wouldn't he just lie? That might be a lie.
There's gave more always of a possibility. Yeah.
Gave him more of an answer than James Franklin would be willing to give to yesterday. So anyway... That was ridiculous. See that?
It was totally ridiculous.
Like, you made it 10 times worse.
I know.
Just say something on the mic, say you can't speak on that issue right now, and you're going to let the process play out. Instead of the stupid histrionics that he went through. But, you know, James Franklin is very good at making things crazy. Anywho, Owen said this yesterday during the podcast, the Emerging Podcast Scene presented by Extend Technologies. You had brought up to Owen that you are pulling for the Yankees, not rooting, pulling for the Yankees to win.
It was just if I what team quote. I wanted to win over the other, it's the Yankees.
You want the Yankees to win?
I don't want anybody to win. I want one of those scenarios where they just cancel baseball.
No,
right?
I want baseball.
Honestly, I'm not going to say I'm rooting for them at all. I just think it helps the Guardians look. It helps me look at the Guardian season and go, okay, we're okay right now if the Yankees win it, because it gives me the option of saying the Guardians are still one of the top three teams in baseball right now. They lost to the world champions.
Yeah.
The Yankees really came out, and I thought we had so many opportunities in that series to win that and be playing tonight in the World Series that they blew those things, just pitching to the wrong guys at the wrong time. And if the, on the other hand, if the Dodgers won it, then I'd go, who knows? When you put the NL teams and the AL teams together, Guardians are still back there, and, you know, they're a top 10 team, but they're not a top 5 team. So just for my own well-being, mental well-being, I kind of need the Yankees to win.
I just want the Dodgers to win. I think it helps my mental well-being if the Dodgers win.
I don't know either team.
Even though they have by far the more expensive payroll, right? Especially if you look at the future amount that's allocated, the way they worked everything. Like they backloaded everything.
Yeah, they didn't front load the contract. They backloaded
it. If like the Padres got in somehow, I could have been like, okay, rooting for the Padres.
Like the Yankees don't have a fraction. The way they're running the team, don't have a fraction of the money that the Dodgers do.
No,
like it's a fraction.
And they're also on borrowed time with how they're doing their payroll right now. Even
The Dodgers that are I think clocked in at over 240 this year for their payroll.
But again, it's totally misleading.
And that's completely understood. But the way I'm looking at it is totally different, where I know one Los Angeles Dodger fan personally, one. How many Yankee fans do I know? One sitting in the other room where he'll deny it, but then the other ones who are loud and proud like Scott, like Sean Marash, and I'd like them to be miserable. Yeah, I'm rooting for the Dodgers.
This is interesting because
I want the Dodgers to win.
Both teams represent what we hate the most about baseball and the disparity.
Yep.
And the fact that those two markets have a bank that we can't have. Their local TV money is outrageously more than what we're getting. We are getting a fraction of a fraction of what we were supposed to get, which is a fraction of what the other teams are getting.
It's not just the money for me. I think baseball has become such a regional sport, and I know there are New York City Yankees fans, and I know there are LA County Dodgers fans. I don't think they're as good of fans as we are. I just don't think they're as good of the hardcore Guardians fans. I think are such better fans than those, and I have nothing.
Well, how
to
would you go about?
Of.
How would you? I'm hearing that because I've heard that my whole life. But how do you know? How do you go about? How do you go about proving that?
I'm over at that ballpark 40 days of summer, and I see it from the people. And there are days, and I've admitted several times, I treat it like the biggest outdoor patio in Cleveland. But
well, that's tough then. That's tough then, Owen, because if I was looking at the fan bases who deserve it, one who deserves more than the other, then I have to say Yankee fan. Yankee fans, I know there's a lot of weirdos out there. They are passionate. They are more passionate than a Dodger fan.
Well, they know the history, too. I mean, if you talk to them, they definitely know the history because they've been good forever.
And they do hold their team to a very high standard, probably an unrealistically high standard. If you were talking about who deserves it more, then yeah, I'd have to agree with you. It'd be the Yankees. I just know way more Yankee fans than I would ever know any of them.
And
so
that's where I go back to, I don't really care about their fans deserving it or not. I just need it for my fandom. I need the Yankees to win so that I can say, well, we lost to the champs.
Yeah,
not the other way around.
I'll tell you this, though. I'm going to pay attention to this World Series. I have not paid attention to World Series in a long time, and I got to thank the Guardians for getting me interested in caring about this series, because I know the Yankees now and the Dodgers. I mean, Ohtani is must watch, and is Aaron Judge, who's been terrible in the playoffs, he's still must watch.
Yeah,
he still is must watch, and Stanton in the playoffs is must watch. There are enough guys in this
about
series.
Their lineup. We learned enough about their lineup over a week and a half to know their lineup is lethal anywhere. I mean, Austin Wells hit the ball, and I didn't even know who that guy was 2 weeks ago.
I still want the Dodgers to win just because it's a path of least resistance, and I don't need to hear any sort of craziness or whatever. I don't want to watch a Yankee victory parade. I don't want to hear any of it from Yankee fan. I don't want to deal with it with Yankee fans. So I'm just going to take the Dodgers. I'm going to hope the Dodgers win. I don't know if I take the Dodgers. Obviously, I've seen a lot more Yankees this year, but I'm gonna hope the Dodgers win. All right, you finally remembered. You brought this up. It was a big deal yesterday because you and I got to clucking about Mike Vrabel. What was this point you wanted to make about Kevin Stefanski's decision?
Yeah, it's a once. I can't imagine there have been other situations like this where you have a coach that is a two-time coach of the year that is on our sidelines, but the team is reeling a year removed from this magical run in which the coach was given so much credit for the run nationally that he won coach of the year for a second time, something they don't like to do. They don't typically like to give a coach that's already won it another one, okay?
All right.
And at the same time, he has the backbone. He has the security, the confidence to bring in another coach that is widely respected, and so widely respected that he is going to be one of the hot candidates for the Dallas Cowboys if that job opens up. Any number of teams around the NFL, he's going to be one of the most sought-after coaches in Mike Vrabel. And Stefanski brought him in on the sidelines. And the joke.
So are you saying letting the roofs, or the wolves into the rooster's den or whatever the hell? The hen's den or whatever. The hen house, that's what it is.
Yeah, and I don't know that we've ever had a situation like this.
Yeah, I got the reference.
Where we have both of those guys are going to be in the same spot the fans are already starting to clamor for Vrabel because he's a hometown kid. That's the other element of this. And he's a Buckeye legend. And he's somebody who has such great roots in Northeast Ohio. And now, not only will the fans start to call for this,
well,
what is that going to be like for the organization and Jimmy Haslam, who has got that guy in the building, while other teams and their owners are going to want that guy?
See, I am wrestling with this. Because I'm like, man, we don't want to do this too. Because we are still a pro Stefanski show.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't even know if Kevin Stefanski is a pro Stefanski guy himself, but we are pro Stefanski here. I can't ignore the Super Bowl champion, the local guy, the good coach that's now on the sideline. I can't ignore him. I've wrestled this before because I'm going to paint a very bleak picture for everybody who's hoping. At this time yesterday, because I thought even of another point, I said it on 8 last night. How are you going to compete against another team when Mike Vrabel has had a front row seat to all this? He has probably been a confidant of Kevin Stefanski, I would imagine. He has been brought in here to help in whatever way, and he's watched this start to spin out of control. He's watched the reaction. He's seen it all, and he's from Northeast Ohio, so he's seen this a million times. And also, he's got to be about his business. He watched an organization in Tennessee crumble around him. John Robinson gave him bad picks. Then he got blame. Amy Adams Strunk booted him out of there, and now they're just a ship adrift, and he's probably happy he got out of there. Because right now he has the pick of the litter, right? So you have all these other teams, and I'm thinking, what on earth do we have to compete with? You have other teams that have better cap space, better quarterback situations, maybe higher picks by the time this is all said and done. And he has seen how this thing comes apart, where it always goes apart badly. It goes apart especially badly here. So those are four things that are working against you. Oh, by the way, we don't know what's going to happen with Andrew Berry in this case, right? And we also don't know what's going to happen with Paul DiPodesta. And you have said, oh, well, this is it for Paul DiPodesta. You can't be sure. Well, is Mike Vrabel going to sign up to work with the guy who helped orchestrate this mess that he's hired to clean up? Is he going to do that? But there's a but. We know that when they talked the ownership into going after Deshaun Watson, underline that sentence, then it was all hands on deck. I got to get what I need. And we can pay him whatever we can pay him. Let's go ahead and make that deal. All right, what about Mike Vrabel? You have a fan base right now that the players and fans are arguing with each other. You have a fan base right now that knows that this is going to be a build and probably a tooth-pulling build. What better way to bring these fans back in than if you had to make the move with Kevin? And I don't want him to make the move, but if you did, what better way to do it? Do you sign him a blank check and give him all the power and blow everybody out? Are you willing to make that big of a change philosophically in what you do as a franchise? I can't answer that now. That's the one thing you may have over some of these other franchises.
You would have it over Jerry.
You would have it over Dallas.
If Jimmy is that enamored with the guy in the building, if this thing goes really off the rails and he goes to Mike Vrabel and says, come home, we want you here. And Mike Vrabel says, okay, let me call the shots, a la what Josh McDaniels wanted to do, and that was rebuffed. This time around, Jimmy might actually listen to that coach, and that coach might get exactly what he wants.
Or, they might hire a guy who's having a nice 7-0 season right now, and then I'd really have to recuse myself of everything.